Good morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, I'm your host, and this is the show where the subject is writing. If you like to write, if you think you'd like to write, or if you just like to read books and want to know about who's putting them out there, this show is for you. My guest today is a member of our Writers Unlimited group who has been attending our meetings faithfully in San Andreas at Writers Unlimited, which meets in the Arts Council building. And she has to commute from Stockton to get to these meetings, and she works early the next morning, so she's really dedicated. She's an example of how motivated we writers can be when we have the joy of our written work to keep us going. Welcome to Manzanita Voices, Jennifer Hoffman.
Thank you, Linda. I'm happy to be here.
Or is it Jennifer Tristano? You have two names.
Hoffman is my maiden name. Tristano is my married name. When I researched a name to use as an author, there were a lot more Hoffmans than Tristanos, so I decided I would publish under J.M. Tristano.
I think that was a good choice. They're both good names, but I think Tristano is very pretty. And you write fantasy, and Tristano sounds a little bit as if it could be in the fantastic world, because I don't hear the name all the time.
Uh-huh.
You told me that when you were young, in grade school and high school, you didn't like English. You didn't like writing at all. You didn't feel you were good at it. You liked math better. But now you're a writer, and not just a writer, but a writer of fantasy. How on earth did that change come about?
It's true. I did not like English when I was in grade school or high school, and dreaded the teacher asking me to write something. But I did read. I have read since I was very small, and the city library used to fill a van full of books and send them out across the city. So every Tuesday afternoon, I'd be down at the local market checking out the bookmobile and seeing what I could find.
You know, I remember the bookmobile from my childhood, too, and do they still have bookmobiles? I hope they do.
I don't know. Our library opened some branch off libraries, so I think that they cover the community that way.
So they put up a building and maybe eliminated the bookmobile. But still, bookmobiles are wonderful. They can get out into the country. They can get to areas where more people have an opportunity to get the books that they need to read. So any of you listening out there, if you don't have a bookmobile in your community, ask why, because especially with this economy that we have now, where it's really takes a lot of money to build a library, a building, push for a bookmobile. It made a change in Jennifer's life, and she's going to tell us more about that right now.
When I have three boys, and as they were growing up, I took them to the library, and we would check out the Adventures of the Hardy's Boys, and then we'd go home, and we all took turns reading a chapter aloud together. And my middle child, Joseph, is an avid reader, and he was always dragging home books. And when he was in high school, he brought home a book, and I always looked to see what they were reading. And I started reading this book, and I got hooked on it. It was part of a fantasy trilogy, and when it ended, I felt unfulfilled. I was like, is this all? You know, there has to be more.
Is that all there is?
Yeah, and suddenly I felt compelled to write a story.
And you wanted to finish what you thought that story was unfinished, and you wanted to carry it forward. And
yeah,
where it
so
went.
I started creating my own story, but in the other author's world, and that was how I started writing.
What was the name of that book?
I don't remember. It was from the Magic: The Gathering series, which they did several books, and several different authors contributed to the entire series. And I don't remember the name, but it sure inspired me and got me started. So that was my first writing experience.
So you started writing even though you thought you didn't like to write, and you got a lot down on paper, but then you had a feeling about the quality of your writing. You began to discover some things that you wanted to be different.
Yeah, instinctively I knew that the writing wasn't good, but I didn't know why. Because, as I said, I never did well in school in the writing. So, and I began to explore and question, you know, why. I joined a writer's group, and from that I joined another writer's group. And each of the groups that I attended, the writers would help me with certain aspects of the writing, but I still didn't feel complete. So I happened to join a group that was run by my now writing buddy, Lou Gonzalez, and I suggest that all writers find themselves a writing buddy. Your family and friends will not perhaps critique your work in the way in which you need it. You need somebody that's going to tell you the truth, and I found that person in him. He led me to many good books about writing and started me on the path of exploring what is good writing. And from that, I started looking into my own investigation of what how to improve my writing. And Lou came up with a phrase, he coined the phrase, "The question is the answer." And what that means is you have to ask the right question in order to get what you need. So I asked, what is good storytelling? And the what I found out was a lot of information about how to stand up in front of an audience and present yourself and tell your good story. That was not what I wanted. But what that experience led me to was it got me out of the writer sections at Barnes & Noble and over into the screenwriting section. And there I found my answer.
Oh, my goodness. Screenwriting. I didn't know this about you at all. This is Linda Field. I'm interviewing Jennifer Tristano about her writing experience. And you're listening to Manzanita Voices. We'll be right back with more from Jennifer. We're back with Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and I'm talking today with Jennifer Tristano about her writing experience, where she has traveled in her lifetime from not liking English in school, in grade school when she was a kid, not feeling that she was a good writer, and now she is just about ready to publish a book of fantasy. It's a very good story. I've been hearing it in our writers group, Writers Unlimited, and I can't wait for it to come out. Before we get to Jennifer, though, I do have some websites I want to let you know about. Writers Unlimited, which has also become Manzanita Writers Press, where we publish books, is under the auspices of the Calaveras County Arts Council. They do a lot to support us. And we want you to let them know and thank them for the help that they give to us. Our Manzanita Press website, where you can go to learn more about all of us, the individuals in the organization, the books that they've written, place events that we're going to be hosting where you can come and meet us, that is www.manzapress.com, manzapress.com. I'd like to have your feedback. I'd like to know ideas that you have for other shows, how you feel about what you're hearing, and just any suggestions you might give. You can write to me at the station here, email writers@kvgcradio.com. That's Voice of the Gold Country, KVGC. Also, Jennifer Tristano has a website that she would like you to go to learn more about her writing and her fantasy. Is it your email or is it your website, Jen?
That's my email.
Oh, that's your email. I'm sorry. Well, if you have any questions for Jennifer, if you're a fantasy writer, or if you want to know about good parenting skills, because she was telling us about how she read with her boys – all the time when they were kids, and they've grown up to be just great citizens and everything. And I think it's because of the great parenting Jen did.
Thank you, Lynn.
Anyway, if you want to contact her, it's Jen at jmtristano.com. That's J-E-N at jmtristano, T-R-I-S-T-A-N-O.com. Okay, let's get back to this now that we've done our housekeeping stuff. Jen, you were talking about a book that really put you on track as to how to be a good writer. Tell us about it.
Well, as I said, I left the writing section of Barnes & Noble's and went over to the screenwriting section. There I discovered Joseph Campbell and Christopher Vogler. Joseph Campbell traveled the world studying religion and mythology. He recognized the pattern in all stories and in life itself and called it the hero's journey. A young screenwriter named Christopher Vogler discovered Joseph Campbell's book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and began to study myths and how they are models for our everyday lives. He worked in Hollywood and drafted a 7-page memo outlining the hero's journey as proposed by Joseph Campbell. The memo became the Bible for all stories written and produced in Hollywood, and it grew into a book titled The Writer's Journey, Mythic Structure for Writers. This structure was the basis for The Lion King and many more movies. George Lucas credited Joseph Campbell as being a strong influence in the creation of the first Star Wars film. The hero's journey cannot be covered in just the short time that we have, but I will give you a brief overview of what is involved, what aspects of the story that they recommend, and use Star Wars as an example, since most people have seen that movie, I'm sure.
Okay, this is elements that any story should have.
These are elements that the stories, and if you look closely, all the movies in Hollywood will have these aspects in them. In the first step, the hero is living in a place that they are usually have been in for a long time. In Luke Skywalker's case, it's with his aunt and uncle. He is not content, but he is dedicated to staying and helping them with their farm. The second step is a call to adventure. When Luke delivers the droid with Leia's request for help to Obi-Wan, he is asked to go and help save her. The third step in a hero is the hero's refusal. Luke says he cannot leave because his aunt and uncle need him. The fourth step is a situation that arises where the hero has no choice but to go. Luke's aunt and uncle are killed by the stormtroopers. Now he has no reason to stay and goes with Obi-Wan. On the adventure, the hero meets many people. They perform different functions in his development. In Obi-Wan's case, he becomes Luke's mentor. There are many characters that come into the hero's life at this time. There is no set formula, but they can include a mentor, a love interest, in Luke's case, Leia, and many more. The hero has crossed the threshold from his comfortable world into a world of dangers, threats, and obstacles. Think about Lou's fight at the bar, his struggle to get away from his world, and to the Death Star. The next step is being forced into the grasp of death. Luke and the others are taken into the Death Star. Then the hero faces his ordeal. On the Death Star, Luke faces many threats and obstacles. He has to get past the stormtroopers. They end up in the garbage waste disposal area. And finally, though, he rescues Leia and they escape the Death Star and deliver the plans to the rebels. This step is the reward for his efforts, but it is not over. Luke must journey back to the Death Star to destroy it and defeat Darth Vader, his antagonist. He succeeds in destroying the Death Star and saving many people. But he is not the same person he was before he started the journey. He has new knowledge of himself and the world. He receives his reward, but he has new goals and sees things differently. This is a brief recap of the hero's journey. It has been incorporated in many successful films throughout the years. And I suggest you buy the book and read it through several times. Each time you should get an idea of a new piece of information that you did not see the first time through. If you have a writer's block, pick up this book and read the formula for what you need to do with your characters. You never know what will come to you.
That's very good advice. Tell us again the name of the book and the author.
The author is Christopher Vogler, and the name of the book is The Writer's Journey, Mythic Structure for Writers.
Very good. I confess I had never heard of this book, but I'm definitely going to find it and put it into use in my own writing life. I imagine it's probably available on Amazon, or you can download it from I'm being told, yes, it is available on Amazon.com. One of the things that you ended with there was talking about how there always has to be a change in the character. And even when we read a scene of a little scene from a big work that we're working on in our writers group, people often will say, well, that scene didn't go anywhere. There was no development. There was no change. So this is the formula that you were talking about in the writer's journey is true for the entire book, but it's also true for scenes and chapters. There always has to be a progression and a movement and development and change in some way. And so if you're writing and you're kind of stuck, don't only just get that book, but think, look at your work and see, is my work moving along? Is the story developing? Or am I just stuck describing things? You need to bring it alive. Jennifer, you have brought in a little bit of the book that you're working on, the fantasy. We have a couple of minutes right now where you could read a little bit from us. Since we don't have that much time to actually get you into reading from it right now, why don't you tell us a little bit about what fantasy is? Why are the names of the characters in fantasy sometimes so unusual to our ears? And how do you choose the names for your characters?
I don't know why fantasy names are so different, but it is true. Perhaps it's because the author uses this method to take you off of this world and transplant you in another world, because you sure encounter some names that you have a very difficult time reading and looking at. I found when I went to name my characters, I began to research what names to use. And I found that names have meanings. We have certain subconscious connotations towards certain names. The name Richard will imply strength, kingly, because of King Richard. A man named Percy might be perceived as being a slightly feminine. And women's names too. There's strong names and sweet names. Gwendolyn is always a name that sounded so sweet and soft to me. So when you're choosing your characters' names, you want to keep in mind, do some research of the name, because there are many websites out there and even books, baby names. I got a book of baby names, and those will give you the definition, or I don't know what the meaning behind the word. Sometimes the names were created based on other languages and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So to give my characters a more off-world sense of name, I went to the Latin dictionary, and I thought about words in English like strong and looked at the Latin name for that. And then I looked at name endings, and I built a little Excel spreadsheet where I could take the Latin name and put it in one column and then have all these other endings in another column. And then I played with them and combined them and came up with words that were similar but not quite the same. They went through many, many connotations one of my characters is a thief, and so I thought, well, I'll look up and see what the word for rogue is. But I didn't find a Latin word that I liked, but right below it was the name rouge. And I like that word, ficare, was the Latin term for rouge. And from that, I put several different endings on, and in the end, I came up with the name of Ficarbio for my thief.
That's amazing that you did all that research. You are a very thorough person.
Thank you.
We're going to get right back to this and hear more about Jennifer's book and her characters in just a moment. You're listening to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Linda Field. You're listening to Manzanita Voices, the program for writers and those who love to read. I'm going to give our website address again so you can find out more about who we are. We are part of Manzanita Writers Press and Writers Unlimited, and all of that is headquartered in San Andreas. Our website is www.manzapress.com, M-A-N-Z-A-Press.com. My email address here at the station, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard or give suggestions, you can contact me, email at writers@kvgcradio.com. And our guest, Jennifer Tristano, has an email address. It's Jen, J-E-N, at J-M Tristano, T-R-I-S-T-A-N-O, .com. Jen at J-M Tristano.com. Now we're back to Jennifer, and she's going to tell us about her fantasy book, which is, does it have a name yet, Jen?
No, it just has the title of the main character. His name is Jokar, so...
Jokar. Okay, well, that's a pretty good working title. So you're going to tell us a little bit about your characters, about where they live, and then you're going to read from the book. So go ahead.
As I said earlier, I abandoned that early manuscript and began writing my own story about a little boy. It's a fantasy based on another world. There are two gods. Who reside on separate moons that orbit the planet. One of the gods, Zargath, feeds off of the negative emotions of the people, and the other god, Argon, feeds off of the positive ones. So Zargath stirs up conflict whenever he can, and Argon promotes peace. The humans born under one moon or the other will have dispositions pertaining to that particular god's inclination. My story is about a little boy growing up in this world. He has many obstacles and things that he must overcome to achieve his goal of becoming a good sword fighter. In his heart, he knows that is his destiny.
Sword fighting is important in this book?
Yeah, most fantasies have swords. They're medieval-based types of environments, so... no guns, but...
Oh, okay, okay. And what you were saying about the two gods that govern the universe, that's interesting. It reminded me of something that... It's a saying that I've heard that's very wise, talking about your own personality and the way you live your life. And somebody said you have two hungry dogs... staring you down. One is evil and angry, and the other is good and compassionate. And the dog that you feed with your emotions is the one who will become the stronger. And that sounded like the gods in your book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had
okay.
never heard that.
Yeah, let us hear now more of your story.
Okay, this is the beginning of the story. Zargath's moon peered over the mountain range and rose into the night sky. Its crimson light spread over the valley below, piercing and dispelling the dark, and creating new shadows wherever it went. Like the light, the power of Zargath's hunger stalked the landscape in search of a human emotion to feed on. But Argon's moon had gone ahead of his and left the residents of the valley in blissful sleep. It would take too much effort to turn their sweet dreams into nightmares, so Zargath continued to direct his power in search of easier prey. In an area nestled between a creek and the edge of the forest, the moonlight illuminated a small cottage set apart from the other cottages. Within the shadow of the forest, Zargath sensed hatred from the short silhouettes stirring there. Sitting on his throne far away on his own moon, he smiled. His instincts told him it would be rewarding to allow his attention to linger here for a while. With ease, the moonlight slipped through the paned glass windows of the cottage, but was stopped short by the thick boards of the inner shutters. Zargath's senses easily pierced the shutters, entered the small room beyond, and from the little boy there, fed on the emotion emanating from him, delicious fear. Jakar sat on the edge of his cot and labored to calm his heart and breathing. I should wake Mama and Papa. He shook his head. No, it's just the same nightmare I keep having. He took a deep breath. But it feels different this time. I just gotta go wake them. And besides, Mama will make me feel better like she always does. He looked across the room, out his bedroom door, and into the living quarters where embers from the cottage's fireplace glowed. Using them as a beacon, Jokar padded in his stocking feet to his bedroom doorway and paused. What if they get mad at me for waking them? This is just a silly dream. To ease the tension in his body, he took another deep breath. The odor of supper still lingered in the air. Mama had prepared the best spring festival meal he could remember to celebrate Papa's return from the war. Jokar inhaled a deeper breath through his nose and savored the memory of the meal. He looked above the reddish hue of the fireplace embers to the place where Papa's sword hung. A tingle started in his toes and rose through his body. I wonder why the sword keeps making me want to touch it. I won't do it. I won't break my promise to Papa. He turned left and headed toward his parents' bedroom. He paused at the door and knocked. Without waiting for an answer, he pushed it open. Mama? Papa? He heard the scrunch of the bedding and his father's voice. Huh? Jokar? Yes, Papa. I didn't want to wake you, but I had the dream again, and I think it's different this time. Jokar's statement was met with silence. Then he heard the bedding rustle and Papa fumbling for his pants. Jokar's heartbeat quickened once again. What's going on? His mother asked. His father answered, Marika, get up. Why? His dream. Jokar? Yes, Mama, I'm here. Jokar, you had your dream again? Yes, Mama, only... His father's voice interrupted his explanation. Marika, get up now. But Zargath's moon is out and he's... No, this is real. Get up. Are you sure? Marika, listen. There was a moment of silence. I don't hear anything. Exactly. The frogs in the creek have gone silent. They are silent because there is someone out there, and with the boy's dream we can be sure of what that is. The bedding rustled again, and this time Jokar heard his mother fumbling for her robe. A yearning welled up inside Jokar to discover that his nightmare had changed, that soon he would wake, warm and safe in his bed. A heavy thump on the front door of his home shook the walls. Jokar jumped and shuddered with the realization that his nightmare had come true. The goblins were here. His heartbeat drummed in his ears, almost drowning out the sound of his parents' footfalls reverberating on the wood floor. He felt Papa race past him. Mama darted through the door after Papa. In a daze, Jokar watched the shadows of his parents, backlit by the fireplace embers, scramble to prepare to defend themselves. He heard his father shout to his mother, "Hurry, Marika, we've got to block the doors." The sound of wood squeaking across the floor sent shivers into Jokar's body. The rattle of dishes told him Mama and Papa were moving the cupboard toward the back door. Again, the cottage shook with a force, striking the front door. And Jokar jumped. He watched his mother and father tip the kitchen table. It fell onto its side with a bang and then chattered across the floor as they pushed it toward the front door. Papa's shadow appeared in front of the fireplace. Another thump on the front door blended with the sound of steel against steel as he withdrew his sword from its scabbard. Light glinted off the blade. Papa rushed toward the front door. "Shall I light a lantern?" Mama asked. Papa's voice sounded stern. "Wait." Jakar's heart leapt when he recognized the sound of a heavy wood board being slid from brackets and realized that Papa was opening the shutters of the window by the front door. A sliver of light became visible and then quickly disappeared. A sense of relief swept over Jakar when he heard the heavy wood board clunk back into place. Papa's voice now sounded strained. "Marika, light the lantern." Jakar blinked. While his eyes adjusted to the light, he looked to his father. Papa's jaws set, and he swallowed. "There are more than I thought there would be." His mother and father stared at each other in silence for what seemed to Jakar to be an eternity. Then Papa nodded to Mama. She straightened and looked at Jakar. With the color drained from her face and in the dim lantern light, she appeared ghost-like. Jakar shuddered. When his mother took a step toward him, he looked around and saw that he had walked from his parents' bedroom to the doorway of his own. He put his hand on the wall to steady himself. His mother's hand gripped his upper arm, and she hurried him into his bedroom. "You must get dressed." Jakar grabbed his pants from the chair by his bed and nearly fell trying to get his foot down the first pant leg. Mama rushed from the room and returned, carrying her cloak. She tossed it onto his bed and set the lantern on the floor. With a sweep of her arm, she dragged his boots out from under his bed. He had never seen his mother in a panic like this before. Glass shattered in the living quarters, and quick short thumps joined the heavy one resounding off the front door. Jakar gasped and jumped. The glass in his bedroom window shattered. Blows from outside caused the shutters to rattle against the heavy board that secured them. Mama pushed him, so he sat down on his bed. She stuck the boots onto his feet and jerked him upright. "You must run to the neighbors for help." Jakar looked up just as the hood of Mama's cloak settled over his head and blocked his vision of her. He felt her hands close the clasp at his neck. He pushed the hood back from his head, and it settled onto his shoulders. "No, Mama, I can stay and help you and Papa." She pulled his arms up to his waist and laced the ends of her cloak over them so it wouldn't drag on the ground. "We need help. You're the only one who can get it." A knot in his stomach tightened. "But, Mama, I don't want to leave you and Papa." She took his hands in hers and squeezed them tight. "You must be strong and brave like Papa." Jakar straightened himself and squared his shoulders. "All right, Mama." He swallowed and let his shoulders sag. "But, Mama, the goblins are out there." She shook her head and said, "They've already tried to get in the windows. They're all at the front door now. I'll set you outside your window. Go straight across the yard to the barn, cross the field behind it to the neighbor's orchard, and run to their cottage." Mama knelt in front of him and looked him in the eye. "You can do this. Run as hard and as fast as you can. Don't stop for anything. Do you understand?" Jakar nodded. Her hands cradled his face. "Always remember what Papa and I taught you. Do what's right. And if you're not sure about something, follow your heart." "I will, Mama, I promise. I'll be brave, just like Papa. I'll bring back the neighbors and we'll fight these goblins." A tear released from her eye and rolled down her cheek. Jakar placed his hand on her arm. "Don't worry, Mama. Papa and I will protect you."
We'll be back in just a moment. This is Linda Field. You've been listening to Manzanita Voices and Jennifer Tristano. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and our guest today is Jennifer Tristano. She's been reading to us from her book of fantasy about Jakar. Did I say his name right? Yeah. And my goodness, what you just read, the opening of the book about this little boy who's at home at night with his parents. He has a bad dream and he wakes up to go and tell his parents about the dream, and he's had it before, and the dream seems like it must be sort of a warning. And his father is a good father, because he doesn't just push the kid away and say, oh, come on, you'll get over it, just go back to sleep. No, the father listens and realizes that this is a warning that has come to them, and they have to act. And they're attacked in their home at night by goblins.
Yes.
Again, this is a fantasy. And it ended with Jocard being sent by his mother. She puts him out the window and says, go and run and get the neighbors and get help for us. We need you to do this for us. He leaves them. And what happens after that, Jennifer?
After that, when he tries to get around the barn, he's surprised by a goblin coming out of it. So he dives under his father's wagon that's parked there and waits for the goblin to go back inside. Then he runs for the field and the neighbors. But he hears the front door of his cottage give way and his mother scream. So he turns around to go back and help his father, protect his mother like he promised. But when he rounds the corner of the barn, he encounters this goblin, and the goblin hits him on the head and knocks him unconscious. When he wakes up in the morning, he has a concussion, and he staggers to the cottage where he finds his dead parents. He's so devastated by this, he runs outside and collapses onto the ground. And his last thought before he loses consciousness again is that it didn't happen. So he has traumatic amnesia, and he's lost his voice.
Okay, and now you're going to continue from there.
We rejoin him with him waking up. Something or someone jostled him. The boy opened his eyes, startled by the sight of an old man's face hovering over him. His body jerked. He tried to cry out, but no sound came from his throat. The ache in his head made it difficult to concentrate. In an effort to focus his thoughts and ease his nausea, he took a deep breath and tried to observe the man squatting in front of him. The man frowned and rubbed his stubbled, covered chin. Without a word, he stood, spun on his heel, and walked toward what looked like a small house on wheels. The man's hat, coat, pants, and boots were black. Enough of the man's legs stuck out from beneath his long coat. The boy noticed they had a bow to them that caused the man to walk with a sway. White, scraggly hair sprouted from under the brim of the man's hat, and the ends lay strewn about his shoulders. The boy directed his gaze beyond the old man to the house on wheels. Two horses stood harnessed to the front of it, and a wagon piled with furniture was attached to the back. The man walked to the wagon, picked up household items from the ground, and hung them from hooks attached to the sides. All this meant nothing to the boy, and trying to make sense of it made the ache in his head worse, so he closed his eyes. After what seemed like only a few moments, someone shook him awake again. He remembered the old man, so he wasn't startled to see him once again hovering over him. The man squatted in front of the boy and frowned. He rested his elbows on his knees and held his hands in front of him. His right hand gripped the handle of a knife, and his left finger slid back and forth along the dull side of the blade. The boy sat up and put his hand on the back of his head where the pain seemed to come from. His hair felt stiff and matted. When he looked at his hand, it had blood on it. He frowned and looked to the old man, one eye raised on the man's face. Do you remember how you hurt your head? The boy shook his head ever so slightly and tried to answer. No sound came out. He put his hand to his throat. His mouth was dry, but it seemed to him that it shouldn't matter. He tried to speak again, but could not. The man set his jaw and squinted at the boy. They stared at each other in silence. All the while, the man's fingers continued to slide along the dull side of the knife blade. The boy struggled to make sense of his situation. Who is this man? How come I can't speak? Where am I? He looked again toward the small house on wheels, and this time he noticed the cottage. Its back door was open and its windows broken. It seemed familiar, but he could not remember why. Fear gripped him with such a force he had to look away, so he directed his gaze across the yard to the barn and a shattered hen house. A chicken feather blew into his leg and danced away on the breeze. He tilted his head and looked to the man. The man frowned at him. Well, it looks like you're finally going to stay awake this time. The corner of his mouth twitched. So you hit your head hard enough that you really can't remember how it happened, huh? The boy shook his head again to answer. Well, where I come from, fellas is always fighting, and sometimes they gets knocked out. I knowed several of them who lost their memories, so I expect that's what happened to you. The man stopped stroking the dull side of the knife blade and rested his chin on his hand. His right hand drooped a little, but he continued to grip the handle of the knife. I never knowed no dumb mute like you who started talking when they never had before, so you may as well stop trying. He squinted at the boy as if he was expecting a reaction. Unsure of what to do, the boy remained motionless and tried to make sense of what the man was saying. The man took his left hand away from his chin and once again scratched the stubble on his cheek. Do you remember my name? Again, the boy shook his head. The old man used the sharp tip of the knife to now clean under the fingernails of his left hand, but at the same time he seemed to be watching the boy. The name's Ingus, but I don't suppose since you don't talk, that don't do you no good anyway. He paused and took his attention away from his fingernails and directed it to the boy pointing the knife at him. Well, you was supposed to be helping me with loading the wagon, and all you been doing is sleeping on the ground here. But I'll see to it that you make up for it later. Don't think I won't. The boy wasn't sure if he was supposed to respond, so he stared at the old man and waited to see what he would say next. Inga stood, replaced his knife in its sheath on his belt, and jerked a thumb toward the small house on wheels. Boy, go get in my caravan over there. And in case you forgot, don't go trying to climb into my bed, neither. You can stay on the floor, and don't go getting blood on everything. I'll tend to your head when we stop for supper. Right now I'm going to go through these buildings again and see if there's anything I missed. Now get, and watch where you're going this time, and don't go falling down and hitting your head again. You're no good to me dead. The boy struggled to his feet. The images in his sight swam in front of him. He paused, bent over, and put his hands on his knees in an effort to ease his dizziness. After a moment, he straightened and tottered toward the house on wheels. Something pressed against his throat, and it was only then he realized that he was wearing a cloak. It dragged on the ground behind him, but he didn't care. It took all his concentrated effort to reach the house on wheels. He climbed the ladder steps, opened the door, and went in. The inside was just as jumbled with all kinds of household items as the outside. The boy curled up on a clear spot on the floor and felt relieved to lie down again. In a short time, he felt the floor beneath him tilt. Ingus hollered, "Get up!" The caravan jerked forward. All the things that hung on the inside and outside walls clinked and clanked as they swayed in the rhythm to the motion of the caravan. The movement made the boy nauseous. To take his mind off his stomach, he tried to remember what had happened before he woke up. After a while, he sighed. It's no use. My head hurts too much. The man, Ingus, knows me, and it seems that I came here with him. He took a deep breath. But it doesn't feel right. I just gotta remember what happened. A knot formed in his stomach. Panic welled up inside of him. What's my name?
Okay, this is leading into a very mysterious story where Jocard has a very difficult life. He becomes basically a slave to Ingus.
Yes.
And leads a miserable existence until he finds deliverance in some way, and the story moves on from there. And I have to say, I have really been enjoying listening to the story in our writers group, and I really want you to finish the book.
I'm working on it, chapter by chapter, word by word.
And your friend Lou is probably going to help you put this on e-books, e-book publishing.
Yes, I intend to publish through the e-books and not go through the traditional publishers.
So are you going to also have a paper book, a book that we can hold in our hands to read?
I will do a paper book, back book. So.
Great. Wonderful. I think a lot of people will look forward to hearing it. Jennifer, it's been such a treat having you on the show today. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
I've enjoyed it too. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And this is Linda Field, Manzanita Voices. We hope you'll come back and hear us again next time. Have a nice week.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.